Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 134.
Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The sergeant-at-arms will close the doors. Members and guests are asked to please silence all electronic devices. This morning's prayer will be offered by Representative Clampett. We'd ask our members and our guests in the gallery to please stand for the prayer and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance thereafter. Representative Clampett, good morning.
Good morning,
sir.
Good morning, everyone. 1 Thessalonians 5:18, give thanks in all circumstances, for this will be the will of God in Jesus Christ for you. Let us pray. God, we thank you for who you are and all you have done for us. We praise you when life is hard. We praise you when life is happy. We choose to thank you in all that's in between. You alone deserve to receive the glory. May we give you the credit, glory, praise, and everything we do. We ask for your forgiveness of our sin, and in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for September 28th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Hall moves the journal for September 28th to be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Also, we have a special guest with us today. Former House member, Representative Yvonne Lewis-Holley, is with us in the back of the chamber. Representative Holley, good to see you with us today. Representative Holley, good to see you. Every time I hear somebody talk about a food desert, I think about you. I remember you did that bill and remember well the debate between you and Representative Speciale one day. Good to see you with us today, ma'am. Senate Bill 336, the short title of that bill is the Condominium Declaration Requirement Changes. That bill is withdrawn from the Committee on Rules. It is referred to the Committee on Judiciary 1, and if with a serial referral to Rules thereafter if reported favorably from that committee. Senate Bill 66, that is the Regulate Use of Deer Secretions for Hunting. That bill is withdrawn from the Committee on Rules. That bill is referred to the Committee on Wildlife with also a serial referral to Rules. Members, House Joint Resolution 975 to confirm Karen Kemmerat to the Utilities Commission was filed with the clerk's office yesterday after 3 p.m. Without objection, however, the chair would ask that Rule 31 be suspended so the resolution may be received in its first reading today. Hearing no objection, so ordered. The introduction of the bill's resolutions, the clerk will read.
Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. House Joint Resolution 975, confirm Karen Kemmerat, Utilities Commission.
Bill is referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. Calendar. House. Senate Bill 85, the clerk will read.
Senators Corbin, Bergen, Woodard, Senate Bill 85, Committee Substitute, a bill to be entitled Allow Vision Service Plans. The General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a privilege to walk this dog for Senator Corbin from the mountains. Senate Bill 85 is a bill designed to modernize the portion of Chapter 58 that defines the various types of health insurance plans regulated by the State Department of Insurance. The way Chapter 58 is written now makes it difficult for a health plan that only offers one type of coverage, for example, dental insurance, to also offer their customers other types of coverage. Furthermore, Chapter 58 does not address the offering of vision service plans by health plans. Members of the House, this bill is good for consumers. It increases competition. It's been through a myriad of committee meetings, unanimous approval, both the House and the Senate, and I'm not aware of any opposition.
Representative Lambeth is recognized. Send forth an amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Lambeth moves to amend the bill.
Representative Lambeth is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. This is a very technical bill. It's just a date change from October 1 to November 1, 2021. Obviously, October 1 is right on us, so we're just going to push this out a month.
Gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, recognized to debate the amendment.
Would be supportive of the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House, the adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. Further discussion, further debate on the bill as amended? If not, the question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 85 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Please show Bumgardner excused, Mr. Clerk. Representative Reeves, is the gentleman enough, Representative Gallagher, to like an excused absence or not? Please show Gallagher excused, Mr. Clerk. Clerk, lock machine, record the vote. 92, having voted in the affirmative, none, the negative. Senate Bill 85 passed the second reading. Without objection, be read a third time.
The General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 85 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 85, having passed its third reading, is ordered engrossed and returned to the Senate. Actually, we'll strike it engrossed. We'll send it over and engrossed, Mr. Clerk. Senate Bill 183, clerk will read.
Senators Brett Sawyer, Daniel. Senate Bill 183, House Committee Substitute, a bill to be entitled, Begin Modernization Ignition Interlock Laws. The General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Senator Stevens, would you like to send forth the amendment first?
Or debate? Fine. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. The ladies recognize, send forth amendment. Clerk will read. Looks like it just moves an effective day.
Senator Stevens moves to amend the bill.
Everybody wants me to be a senator today.
I was going
to
say, did you say Senator Stevens?
And you did too.
Wow.
Okay. Yes, members, all this does is, because we're so late in getting this bill out, the Department of Transportation and Department of Motor Vehicle, Vision Motor Vehicles asked that we move the date out to June 1st, 2022. That's all it does.
Question for the House, the adoption of the amendment. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. Now the lady, Speaker Pro Tempore Stevens, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, members. This makes a couple of adjustments so that people can get their limited driving privilege with ignition interlock a little bit quicker. It also says that if you have multiple vehicles and you've got a DWI, that you would only have to put the ignition interlock on the one vehicle that you drive. And the third thing it does is, I think, well, actually two more things. One thing that it does, I think, is very interesting is the ignition interlock industry has agreed to set up a fund for people who cannot afford to get the ignition interlock, and they will help subsidize that cost. The last thing is to study those ignition interlock laws and see if we may need to make further adjustments. Ask for your support.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Maury Rice?
Thank you. To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Stevens, the lady yield?
Certainly.
She yields.
Thank you. Representative Stevens, on the interlock, if the interlock is installed, and is the interlock used just to start the ignition, or is there also provisions that if someone is driving, it's a continuous monitoring that someone has to keep blowing in? Do we know?
The members have the floor for questions and answers.
Thank you. No, you normally have to only do it to start the vehicle. That's what the ignition interlock is for.
And do we know how, follow-up question, please? Do we know how many companies are providing these interlock devices in North Carolina?
I do not. I remember in one of the committee hearings, there were several different ignition interlock companies. They all agreed to participate.
Thank you. And during those committee hearings, did anyone talk about what the installation costs, what the monthly costs, and what the removal costs are?
They did.
Do we know what they are? Do you know what they are?
I don't recall off the top of my head.
Okay.
Didn't prepare that for today's bill.
Okay. Thank you. Speak on the bill, Mr. Speaker.
The lady has floor to debate the bill.
Thank you. Members, I have concerns. This is a dramatic change in our DWI sentencing and provisions. If someone is charged with DWI, they're pulled over, and they do a breathalyzer, and they have more than a .15, their license is revoked, at least for 10 days. Or if there's a conviction, they have a prior conviction, they have more than a .15, it's a 45 days. They are told you cannot drive. A judge has been able to give limited driving privileges. And a judge can say, you are only allowed to drive from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. to go to work, to go to school, to do child care. You can't drive Saturday nights. You can't go to the bar. You might be ordered to use an interlock. We're taking all that away. We're saying, if you can afford it, let's start paying these private companies to give you a device to put in your car. And if you blow and you're okay, or if someone else possibly blows in it, your car is going to start. Some companies do continuous monitoring. And if you're driving after 30 minutes, you have to blow again to make sure your car is still going, which is another concern about highway safety. What I'm saying is, this is taking away a lot of discretion on a case-by-case analysis of people who are blowing over twice the legal limit, who may have prior convictions, and we're just saying, if you can afford an $80 to $150 installation fee, typically monitoring is $80 a month, and oftentimes people cannot have these devices removed unless they are totally paid up and there's another removal fee. The other issue is, if someone blows into their interlock and it registers alcohol, the car does not start, what happens? They have to wait typically 24 hours, and they can go back and they can blow and it will start. It's not reported to the judge or the courts. It is reported to the private company, Monotech, Smart Start, what other companies we have, and you go in every 60 days. And during this appointment, there may be another fee, and they will recalibrate. And they will know, oh, on October 1st, Marsha Morey blew, and the car wouldn't start. But it may not be a violation. What I am saying is, there are a lot of questions to this. Are we being more lenient with drunk driving? Section 5 of this bill allows for a study, which I think is a great idea. But right now, should we be drastically changing the way we give a privilege upon a privilege to drive if it puts people at risk of drunk driving? I'm all for Section 5, the study. I appreciate there is a reduction in fees for those that cannot afford it. But don't forget, these people that are charged and go to court are paying hundreds and thousands of dollars for attorney's fees and court costs. And now we're saying, let's get another $600,000, $800,000 to do this interlock device. Let's study it. Let's make sure it's effective. I urge you to vote no, not to concur. Thank you.
For my purpose, the lady from Wake, Representative Ball, rise.
To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Stevens, lady yield.
I yield.
She yields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm interested in trying to gather some sense of what our surrounding states, we compare ourselves frequently to them, when we change things and so forth. I'm wondering if you can provide any information about what our surrounding states are doing in this same area.
I cannot, but this bill is not nearly as drastic as Representative Morey makes it to be.
Follow up.
Lady Yield.
Mr. Speaker, Shield. Is it possible if there is anyone in the chamber who has studied the surrounding states in this area that could provide information? That would be helpful. If not, I'll yield. Thank you.
For Barbara Slay from Surrey, Representative Stevens, rise.
Speak a second time on the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, we have found that this ignition interlock system does work very well. Ignition interlock, when there is a failure, does go back to the company, and the company is obligated to report it to the Department of Motor Vehicles. Several of our members in here have handled hearings that involve a blow that was deemed inappropriate, and DMV conducts a hearing on that. I will tell you that this bill is endorsed by MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. This is not a radical departure from anything. It is allowing people, which is what we've been hearing people ask for, is to get back to work, to keep them trying to be functional and not getting into a vehicle and driving while they're drunk. Ask for your support.
Representative Ball, you had asked a question, I think, about something on hearings. The chair's presiding, but glad to try to give you a quick answer. This is an area of law that I've practiced in. And what I can tell you is that when a person fails those tests, if they give, if they have a, what it does, it keeps a monitor of these things when they submit to a test. When they fail it, that gets reported to DMV. And when it gets reported to DMV, they will bring that person in to and look at revoking their limited privilege. I know there's a number of attorneys here who probably have handled that in their practice, but that's what I've seen. I don't know if that's what the lady's question was, but just not wading into the debate, but as an attorney, I've handled that for clients. So, for what purpose does the gentleman from Swain, Representative Clampett, rise?
Speak on the bill. The
gentleman has the floor.
My Western North Carolina DWI task force that I'm a member of has appreciates this bill coming forward and endorses the bill as well. I'd like for everybody to vote for it.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Hastings, rise?
To see if Representative Stevens would yield for a question.
Representative Stevens, the lady yield.
I will.
She yields.
Yes, ma'am. Just to clarify, you said that Mothers Against Drunk Driving are for this.
They are.
Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise?
A question for the bill sponsor.
Representative Stevens, I guess it is. Well, maybe you are a senator now. I don't know. It's a lady yield, she yields.
Friendly question, I think. Representative Stevens, if I understand it correctly, under certain circumstances, in order to start your car with the ignition interlock, there's a 0.00 tolerance. And if I understand correctly, this bill, it can be anywhere from 0.00 to 0.04, but this sets a standard of 0.02, which if I understand it would accommodate allowances for things like alcohol in your mouthwash or anything you might have consumed that might trigger it where you don't really have alcohol in your system, but it may show up in the interlock device. Is that my understanding?
That's correct, and it is a 0.02. And my understanding is sometimes strong onions can actually cause this to register. So they're trying to make some allowance for, as you say, natural things that will cause it to be up a little bit.
Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Rowan, Representative Warren, rise?
See if the bill sponsor would yield for a question.
Representative Stevens, the lady yield.
I yield.
She yields.
Representative Stevens, is this the version of the bill that passed the Senate 47-0?
I believe it is.
Thank you.
For what purpose the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise?
Speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't want to kill this bill, but I think it's a good idea. If it's not perfect, you know, we can work on it later, but I think it's pretty good, very good start. And if other states are doing this or are not doing it, I think maybe North Carolina once more needs to lead the way and show them what ought to be done. So let's vote for this. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 183. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Mr. Clerk, go ahead and show Representative Yarbrough excused, as well as Representative Hardestrom and Rogers on this and the preceding votes as well. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 83 having voted in the affirmative and 9 in the negative. Senate Bill 183 passes second reading without objection. Will be read a third time.
The General Assembly and North Carolina General Assembly enacts.
Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 183 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 183, having passed third readings, ordered, engrossed, and sent to the Senate. Mr. Clerk, Chair directs that Senate Bill 470, North Carolina Regulatory Sandbox Act, be withdrawn from the Committee on Commerce. Bill is referred to the Committee on Rules. Any additional committee referrals are thereby stricken. Chair also directs that House Joint Resolution 975, and this will need to be without objection. This is a confirmation of an appointment that was read in earlier to confirm Karen Kemmerat to the Utilities Commission. This bill was heard in the Rules Committee, but it did have its first reading today. Is there objection to that bill being added to today's calendar and suspending the rules that it may have its second and third readings today? Hearing none, so ordered. It's added to the calendar. For what purpose, lady from Wilson? Representative Cooper Suggs.
Mr. Speaker, I want to change my vote on the bill, Senate Bill 183 to a yes.
The lady will be recorded as having voted aye on Senate Bill 183. Senate Bill 695, the clerk will read.
Senators Jarvis, Lee, and Ballard. Senate Bill 695, House Committee Substitute. A bill to be entitled Various Education Changes. The General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the House. This bill is like at the end of every session, towards the end of every session, hoping it's the end of every session. It's kind of a go in, you look in the refrigerator and you see all your leftovers, you're pulling them out and trying to put them, make a meal. This is what has been different bills as they've gone through chambers that didn't make it through, but needed to make it through here at the waning hours of session. And so what this bill actually does is that it exempts school administrators from certain licensure requirements, which means to obtain their license, they had to take some classes, which during the COVID that they weren't able to do, so we're addressing that. Authorize local school administrative units to use payroll deduction plans to pay 10-month employees in 12-month installments of requests of the employees. We think it's fine. Change the date for reporting on student meal debt, a date change, obviously. Authorize public school units to hold state funds in local bank accounts for up to 3 business days after the date of drawing on the state funds before making a final disbursement to the ultimate payee. I would move for approval, and I'll stand for any questions, Mr. Speaker.
Lady from Wake, Representative Gill, recognized to send forth an amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Gill moves to amend the bill.
Representative Gill has the floor to debate the amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stand to present to you an amendment that will modify our school face covering policy. This amendment is designed to help our school board with stability in managing the COVID-19 pandemic mandates, and it also will help our school board and our administration to promote and to provide a safe learning environment for all students and teachers. This amendment changes Senate Bill 654 to require local boards to review and vote on their mask policy only when there is a change in the COVID-19 metrics for that county. And either the school board or the state should determine the parameters by which these modifications to their current mask mandate should be made. This bill does not take away the privilege of the school board to have meetings. What it does is that it provides the public school units to vote as frequently as necessary if there is need to modify their face covering. I ask you to please consider this amendment.
What purpose of the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, rise?
Speak against the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you. Respecting the gentlelady, understanding the plight that she's trying to offer, but let me tell you what it actually does in a nutshell. What it does, it says the board is going to predetermine a decision without giving public hearing opportunity to speak. So they're actually going to have, if they're going to say they're not going to change, that's a decision being made outside of a public domain. I would say there'd be some open meeting questions about this. Let's not deny access to people to the meetings at our school board. I would say vote the amendment down. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
What purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quick, rise?
To speak to the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I would ask for your support of this amendment. It's a common sense amendment that says that if the policy is not being changed, there's no reason for the school boards to meet. We sit here and have the comfort of an entire police force to protect us. We have a controlled public environment here where we meet. School boards, and many of you like myself have served on school boards, don't have those luxuries. And these school board meetings are getting more and more contentious. And in the interest of public safety, I think this amendment is a good one. Also, let's consider the parents. Every month, parents on either side of this debate have to get geared up to attend another meeting. And if nothing is changing, let's not put our parents through having to secure child care, to gather together, get other people of like mind together with them. If nothing is changing, there's no reason to have a meeting. In fact, this very body, when we don't have anything to vote on, we don't come from all around the state to meet here in Raleigh. Let's give our school boards and our parents the same luxury. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman Rice?
Speak on the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I actually think that the more exposure that school boards have to the parents, the better. You know, I certainly don't want to encourage or condone any kind of violence that some people seem to think is going to occur. But I think they need to hear a lot from the parents, because, I mean, I don't get my way, but if I had my way, there would be no vaccine or mask mandates anywhere. And I think for the parents to have more opportunity to tell the school board just what they think about it is a good thing, not a bad thing. Hopefully they'll be able to convince some of them to understand that the children don't belong to the school system or the government. They belong to the parents, and it's up to the parents alone to make that decision. I hope they'll be able to, and I commend Union County School Board for their recent decision. Thank you.
For what purpose?
By the way, I'm against the amendment.
For what purpose? The gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
And I just wanted to give my interpretation of what I heard, because I think at some point it went a little far field. I didn't hear in the amendment that it was taking away the opportunity for parents to get heard in front of the school board. School board meetings still are school board meetings. If an issue is put on the agenda, then everything can be discussed. What this is saying is that once the decision has been made, this isn't taking away the initial decision. Once the decision has been made, either to not wear face coverings or to wear face coverings, that decision doesn't have to be revisited every month. I think what's strange for me as I heard the debate on this one go is kind of what we've started doing a lot. I'm fairly confident in each county that school board members are still elected. And as elected officials, they make decisions based on their constituency. Their constituency has the same access to them that they have to all of us elected officials to tell them. So for instance, if you had a decision that was made where there was a decision not to wear face coverings, and if you as a concerned parent or citizen believe that the metrics had changed such that that decision needed to be revisited, this amendment does not stop you having that conversation with your Board of Education members. I definitely don't think this violates any open meetings laws by saying once we've made a decision, we don't have to keep coming back to you and say we've made a decision. That would be like me having to come in every day and say, Representative Quick, yesterday I told you you were my friend. You know you're still my friend? You know you're still my friend. You know you're still my friend. You know you're still my friend. At some point in time, he's going to start wondering what's wrong with me, that I have to keep repeating that I've made a decision when nothing has happened to change why I made that decision. That's all this amendment says, is once the decision has been made, whichever decision it is, whichever side of the political spectrum you are on this issue, that the school board hadn't keep coming back. So again, if you are of the opinion, as was stated earlier, that there should not be face coverings, and that decision is made, you don't have to come back and talk about that decision again unless there has been a change in the metrics. So we're just giving them the same flexibility every other elected board in this state has when they make a decision. And I would hope would take the politics out of the decision. This amendment doesn't tell you which side to fall on. It tells you once it happens, then let's not keep revisiting it. I think it's a little disingenuous to say that some of these school board meetings haven't been a little exciting. And there are people up here that are elected that love that kind of excitement. I like interacting with my constituents. I don't like interacting with angry groups of constituents that might be mad at each other, and I get caught in the middle of them being mad at each other. If you like that, there's some MMA opportunities that you've got. You can go on down there. But I think that the essence of elected office is cooler heads sitting and talking and making decisions that sometimes require this weird little word we like to call compromise, and that's it. So that's all this is doing. This amendment absolutely is not taking a position on the face covering debate, and I hope we don't vote on this based on the belief that this is taking a position on the face covering debate. So please vote in accordance to that, and I would ask you to support the amendment.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, rise?
Speak a second at a time against the amendment, Mr.
Gentleman has the floor.
I hate to say this, but there's some days I wish I'd gone to law school. If you do listen to the basics of what they're asking us to do, first off, we voted, this body voted to do the monthly meeting some months back, heavily supported, and you should continue to support that. But what they're asking us to do, very simply, is that if you listen, said, if no change is made for the next month, they don't need to meet. Well, who made the determination that no change was going to be made the next month? My guess would be members of the school board. So if they didn't meet to make the decision that no change would happen the next month, or did they meet? Were the public there when they made the decision not to meet because no change was going to be? I think you kind of see where I'm going. Somebody's, if you just listen to what they're saying, someone's making that decision not to change a mask policy, but they're doing it outside of the public access. They're doing it outside of a public meeting. I just don't think that's the right thing to do, and I trust you will vote down the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quick, rise?
To debate the amendment a second time. The
gentleman has the floor.
To lay out the practical aspect of it, the initial meeting is made publicly in front of the public, that and with public input and parental input and anyone else who wants to provide input. So that initial meeting is open to the public. Public input, parental input is given then. After that, what we're saying is there's no need that after the initial public meeting where the decision was made publicly, if nothing is going to change, there's no reason to meet again. Thank you. And I ask again for your support of the amendment.
For what purpose, gentlemen, Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise.
Speak second time on the amendment. The
gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to clarify something. I didn't say anything about public meeting laws being violated. My point is that, well, I'll just give you an example. Cabarrus County, they voted to make masks optional, and in a very short time, they turned around and voted to make them mandatory. And this past Monday, knowing they're in trouble with a lot of people in Cabarrus County for that, they had a meeting where they had a bunch of people come in and basically support their decision. But the public was not allowed to be there except virtually. I think they took an opportunity to see to it that they didn't really hear from the public when, you know, they're trying to bolster the decision that they'd already made. What I'm saying is we did, as Representative Torbett pointed out, vote to have them reconsider this every month. And circumstances change and that sort of thing, and this kind of mandate forced on people, a lot of whom are very upset about it, should be revisited. And I just think we need to make sure that the public always has that opportunity to do so publicly at the meetings. So it needs to continue to be looked at, and we need to allow the public to be there, unlike what Cabarrus County School Board did Monday night. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Brunswick, Representative Isla Rise.
Briefly ask a question of the bill handler, Representative Torbett.
Representative Torbett, gentleman yield.
With trepidation, Mr.
He yields.
You should. Great trepidation. Thank you, sir. Just as making a point, basically, with my question, we've heard follow the science, follow the data for almost two years. And as we all know, if we pay attention, is the science and data seem to change from time to time. So we're just leaving the school board and the people that attend the meetings, the parents, the flexibility when that happens to change. Is that a fair statement?
That is an absolutely fair statement, yes, sir.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Chatham? Representative Reeves, rise.
To debate the amendment a second time, but I think Representative Isla just made my point.
So, the gentleman has the floor.
Okay, so again, to clarify, and I can appreciate one, Representative Pittman, if it sounded like I was talking about you on the open meetings, apologize. I was trying to go through pains not to call out anybody because I know that's our rules, not to say anybody's name. Somebody else said something about open meetings, but I'm following the rules. The second, and I can appreciate that somebody said they wish they'd gone to law school. As I spend October in here and 10 months away from my law office, I wish I hadn't gone to law school because then I could be in a business where I could make some money, but I digress. Representative Viola, that's our exact point. And again, this isn't about this. There's no lawyer trick here. This isn't about, you know, if you follow the science, you do this amendment. If you don't follow the science, you don't support this amendment. This is saying whatever decision you come to in that public meeting, you don't have to keep coming back. This is not a lawyer trick. I'd love to tell you that there's some genius behind this that's going to trap us into changing something. It is accepting that we've already made a bill that says, look, this decision has got to get made and you've got to have a chance for people to talk about it. What this is also saying on a practical level, for those of you that remember being on school boards, you got a lot of stuff you need to be covering at school board meetings. And going over a decision every month that's already been made takes away from the time that you actually have to use to administer taking care of your school system. So now that 3 to 4 hour meeting that you're already going to have, you don't get to cover things about basic running of the school system. So again, I've been trying my best not to do these kind of debates this year, but this is not a partisan amendment. This is not a partisan issue. If every single county has made the decision right now not to use face coverings, we are now telling them you don't have to keep coming back. You don't have to keep coming back to defend that. You don't have to worry about people descending on you from all over the nation, which we've had happen at local school board meetings, coming from all over the nation to then get into a debate about whether you should have made the decision you already made. And if the science changes, all somebody's got to do, any member of the public can come in and say, and it sounds like I've heard some arguments where people don't like face coverings. So let's say that your school board has made a decision to use face coverings. You don't like that decision. All you got to do as a member of the public is be able to show something has changed since the last time. This is the same standard that the speaker and I and Representative Hall have to use when we're trying to get an issue reopened in court. It's the exact same thing. Something has changed since you made your decision. We would like to be heard about that change. This isn't hard. Because you're right. You're going to find somebody somewhere to back your position. So this is really not a hard standard. So again, I would ask to support the amendment so that if you've got counties that actually don't want to be on the news every month, give them a chance not to be on the news every month. That's it. And I would bet you, Republican or Democrat, if you went back to your school boards, there are probably a school board here and there that have a Republican and a Democratic member that said, Robert, I really would like to not be on the news every month. I'd really like to get back to school board stuff. I really don't want to be in y'all's debate about masks and science and all that stuff. Can we get back to doing school things? This amendment gives them this the opportunity. And that's it. And if somebody has language in the amendment that says that this is some underlying partisan plot to destroy the mask mandate. Happy to hear it, but this amendment looks a lot simpler than that to me. So thank you.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A1 sent forward by Representative Gill. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 41 having voted in the affirmative and 51 in the negative, the amendment fails. We're now back on the bill. Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 695 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Johnson wish to vote on the bill. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 92 having voted in the affirmative and none of the negative. Senate Bill 695 passed the second reading without objection. Will be read a third time.
The General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 695 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 695 having passed its third reading, be returned to the Senate. House Joint Resolution 975, the clerk will read.
Committee of Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. House Joint Resolution 975, a joint resolution providing for the confirmation of the appointment of Karen M. Kimmerott to the Utilities Commission. The House resolves, the Senate concur.
Chairman from Caldwell, Representative Hall is recognized to debate the resolution.
Members, this is just one of the governor's appointments to the Public Utilities Commission. I don't know of any opposition, and I ask for your green vote.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question for the House is the passage of House Joint Resolution 975 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 92 having voted in the affirmative, none the negative. House Joint Resolution 975 passed the second reading. Without objection, be read a third time.
The House resolves, the Senate concurring.
Question for the House is the passage of House Joint Resolution 975 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Joint Resolution 975 having passed its third reading, ordered sent to the Senate. Members, we have concluded with our votes. The gentleman from Northampton, Representative Ray, is recognized to send forth a representative statement that will be read in its full or in its entirety upon the adjournment, and the gentleman has the floor at this time to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, having submitted a representative statement with a clerk, I ask it be read in its entirety upon the adjournment, spread across the journal, and would like to be recognized to speak to the statement.
So ordered.
Thank you. Today is a very humbling day for me, and everyone has high schools around the state that are very important. But I come from an area that come from a mill town, and the mill town is closed, and the town is still there. So this year in Roanoke Rapids, we're going to have the 100th centennial of the Roanoke Rapids High School. And, you know, our community takes pride, and it's a lot of blood, sweat has gone into organizing this, but all high schools are important, and it's really amazing how our community has come around and how people have worked together and made a really big difference. So the Roanoke Rapids High School building was the central to Samuel Patterson, the founder of our community building, and where our high school stands in the center part of the town. And every graduation night, it's a three-story building, and it's a beautiful building. And I ride by at nighttime. I was not a graduate of Roanoke Rapids High School, But I'm proud to say that my two cousins did graduate, and many other people. But they light up every window, or every classroom is lit up, and it's one of the prettiest things with the historical building that we have there. And it's something to be proud of in our community. And when Samuel Patterson, his vision was to have a unique place in 1921. That's 100 years. Everyone knows that. But the Masons put a time capsule in the corner of the building. And this week we're going to be very blessed to have the Grand Master to come up this week and to take that time capsule out. And then we also will be able to put some things back in there for the next 100 years. So that's going to be pretty unique. But when they built the high school, they had an auditorium for 200 seats in Roanoke Rapids. I mean, halfway between Maine and Florida in 1921. And so that was very instrumental to our community. And it's still it's been refurbished and it still stands with honor. And it started with 58 teachers and 1,457 students. And I'm proud to say that Roanoke Rapids High School is the oldest still operation standing high school, thanks to the high school system and also thanks to the alumni. They have really gone out. They've got banners. It's like $1,000 for a banner to put back into the school, and they raised over $100,000 this year, and which is a big thing. So to the school system, to the community, congratulations on the 100th anniversary of the Roanoke Rapids High School. It's pride for the school remains as strong as it did 100 years ago. It is fitting to observe the 100th anniversary of Roanoke Rapids High School as the oldest high school building still in use in North Carolina, and to commend the citizens of Roanoke Rapids for the contribution to preserving this historic building. Go Yellow Jackets.
For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Dahl, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The lady has the floor.
I would like for everybody to join me in wishing my seatmate a happy belated birthday. I think it's 39, right? Happy 39th to Munchie.
Happy birthday. And members, on motion of Representative Ray, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to a number of special guests on behalf of Roanoke Rapids High School who are here. Of course, we heard the representative statement and the point of personal privilege read earlier. I would ask these folks, when I call your name, to please stand. We have Juliana Thompson, who is the acting superintendent. Felicia Booker, who is the executive director of CTE Accountability and Testing, CTA. Cindy Boone, class of 1979, administrative assistant and board member of the Roanoke Rapids High School Alumni and Friends Association. I believe we have a number of other guests there with us as well. Would y'all please stand? I want to welcome you and thank you for being with us today. And certainly congratulations on that. For what purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Majeed, rise?
Point of personal privilege. Mr.
The Speaker. Gentleman has the floor.
Today, Mr. Speaker, I want to personally express my guilt of manslaughter. This weekend, the Eagles of North Carolina Central University were slaughtered by the North Carolina A&T State University Bulldogs, 37-14. And so our condolences, sir.
Thank you. There. That was kind of a weak applause on that one, wasn't it, there? I don't know. You might be outnumbered back there, Representative Majeed. For what purpose, gentlemen from Vance, Representative Garrison, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just went to respond to Representative Majeed and just to make him aware that was a fluke.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Buncombe, Representative Turner, rise?
To speak to Representative Ray's statement.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Several years ago, I was fortunate enough that Representative Ray hosted me in Roanoke Rapids to go do a little rock fishing. Which if you haven't had a chance to do it, I highly recommend you do. But during my visit up there, we did take the chance to drive by Roanoke Rapids High School. And it is a beautiful school. In fact, a few years ago, Architectural Digest did a survey, and they named the most beautiful high school in every state, and Roanoke Rapids High was named for North Carolina. And I think the only thing that could ever possibly eclipse that honor was the fact that we all know one of their most celebrated graduates, Deans Eatman, class of 2012, Roanoke Rapids. So congratulations on this celebration, and I look forward to coming up there and celebrating at some point again with you in the future. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, and by the way, it's good to see you back with us, sir. The gentleman has the floor to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Gentlemen, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know you all have missed me, and I have some business to catch up on while I'm up here. I have 2 points of personal privilege and an announcement, if I may, sir.
Gentleman has the floor for all those purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me start with the easy one. The Freedom Caucus will convene directly after Republican Caucus in the very same room to make life easy, 12:28. We have some business to catch up on. I encourage all members to be present and anybody interested to join us as well. My second point is likewise going to be fairly brief. Tomorrow we will celebrate my firstborn, only born son's 39th birthday. Happy birthday, Jason. You've been a wonderful child and brought us some very wonderful grandchildren that we're enjoying so much. With that, I'll move on to my longer point of personal privilege. First of all, thank you for the warm welcome for my return to the House. Do please keep my wife in your prayers as she continues to suffer from pain and fevers. Hopefully we'll get that straightened out in the next week or so. As I'm sure you all know, my wife and I both contracted COVID. After about 16 days, we were actually starting to feel better, but suddenly both of us started to encounter some breathing issues long after the virus was actually done, and we ended up in the hospital with pneumonia. I spent about 3 days there. My wife was there for about a week. She was in far worse condition. And we both recovered and ended up at home. And when she got back home, about 3 days home, she started getting chest pains. And the chest pains, I started looking at her, took her pulse and blood pressure and all this, and it didn't look too good, so I gave her an aspirin and called my doctor. He said, have EMS come out and do an EKG. They said, well, she's not having a heart attack, but her stats don't look good, so we want to take her to the hospital. She got to Beaufort County Vidant Hospital, and they said, no, she's not having a heart attack. We ran EKGs and blood tests. It looks good. About 20 minutes later, her pain increased, and they came in, ran another EKG and blood test, and said, oh, now she's having a heart attack. So they started giving her nitro and clot busters, stuck her in a helicopter, flew her to Vidant Greenville, where they were hoping to put some stents in. And unfortunately, we're not able to do that because there were too many blockages that had accumulated over the years. So, you know, the COVID might have been the thing that pushed the limit for her, but the doctor said she was going to have a heart attack, and it was probably going to be soon. So we're actually thankful that she had that heart attack in the emergency room. I can't think of a better place to be to have that happen than laying on the table in the emergency room. And I have to commend Vidant in both Greenville and Beaufort County. They did a great job for both Vicki and I. Anyway, so they took her over to Greenville, and they were trying to put the stents in. There was too many blockages for that. They only do 3 stents. She had 6 blockages. So they decided to put a balloon in 36 hours later. They really didn't want to do open heart surgery because she had had COVID so recently. And they said, we've never done this before. This is uncharted territory. They had to do the open heart surgery. It was either do that or she was going to die. So they did the open heart surgery, and she came through that. A week later, she was at home. Spent about a week at home and developed sepsis. Back to the hospital. 2 more weeks of hospitalization, and finally she's come home and still suffering from pain as a result of all of this traumatic events. And my son, in fact, said, Mom, you got to stop this. You've used up 5 of your 9 lives. So I'm hoping that she does stop that. Anyway, so she's doing better than she was, but still has a road to haul. I do want to say thank you. We started receiving immediately when our illness became apparent, and I put it up on Facebook. We immediately started receiving wonderful messages and prayers from everybody. It was very heartfelt to us. Text, cards. There's a stack of cards on the table that my wife's keeping, all these Get Well cards that we've received. And interestingly enough, these came not just from friends, but from people we don't even know. It came from folks on both sides of the aisle, in both the House and the Senate. And it was very heartwarming. I got calls from the Treasurer. I got calls from the Lieutenant Governor, Speaker of the House, many of you in here. It's amazing how well people come together. I did note, though, after a couple days, we started getting posts on Facebook that were wishing my wife and I would die. They used various reasons to wish us this ill, from being Trump supporters to being too fat to calling us anti-vaxxers or anti-maskers, which, by the way, my vaccine status is nobody's business, okay? Some even said that if we believed in God, and some of them said, just because you're Republican, we hope you die, okay? Letters, emails, my L.A. fielded hundreds of phone calls from these ill-type people. It was just, to me, it was sickening, to be honest with you. Some even said, if you believe in God and Jesus, why are you taking up a hospital bed? Just go home and pray. Seriously, people? That was just unbelievable. My wife was called some of the most vile names you could imagine. Unbelievable what people said about her. And if you'd like to see them, I can show you email copies. Okay? Can give you the names of these wonderful folks. The amazing thing about today's world is it's easy to track people down. It's easy to find out who they are. Caller ID, go to their Facebook page, their Twitter page, or just Google them. Here's what I want to tell everybody. As I said earlier, easy to find out who they are. Here's what I want to tell you. The vile and nasty ones came from one group of people. Don't take this personal. It's not directed at you. But it came from Democrats, registered Democrats, we looked them up, or people who displayed the icons of the Democratic or liberal parties on their social media pages. If any party does not reject the people with this kind of hate, evil, and vileness in their hearts, I personally believe that party is doomed. Absolutely just disgusting what they said. I want to thank everybody who wished us well, sent us the kind words, prayers, messages, cards, and text. It was heartwarming. To those evil people who wished ill on my wife and wished her to die, may God have mercy on your souls. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Brunswick, Representative Miller, rise? And
point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to, on behalf of Representative Bell, recognize a member of his staff and my LA on their recent wedding that I was fortunate enough to attend. So I'd like to introduce to you Mr. and Mrs. David Capen and Rachel Capen. My LA is in the gallery, so please join me in congratulating them.
Congratulations, y'all. For what purpose does the gentleman from Burke, Representative Blackwell, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
I just want to second the recognition of Brunswick Rapids High School that Representative Ray mentioned before. Actually, I too, like Dean Zietman, but maybe a few years earlier, am a graduate of Brunswick Rapids High School. I actually spent 7 years on the campus, but I need to quickly add, it didn't take me that long to get out of high school. We actually had the 6th grade through the 12th grade then. And I can well remember, as a young boy and a high school student, even then, when maybe those sorts of things wouldn't typically occur to someone of my age at the time, noticing and appreciating what a beautiful building we had the privilege of attending school in. So thank you to the people of Brunswick Rapids for maintaining and offering that quality education that I feel I got. Thank you very much.
Sure. For For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quick, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
I would like to direct my comments to Representative Zach Hawkins, who is always one of the most intelligent people I know, one of the most gifted people I know, and also one of the most well-dressed people that I know. And just let him know he looks a lot better today than he ever has with that North Carolina A&T State University mask on.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Henderson, Representative Moffitt, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Two purposes, a point of personal privilege and an announcement.
Gentleman has the floor for both purposes.
Thank you. First, an announcement. The Committee on Alcohol Beverage Control will have a meeting 15 minutes after adjournment upstairs in the third floor auditorium. Our guests will be the ABC Commission as well as LB&B, who is the warehouse and distribution contractor for ABC. So if you have any interest in this, I would encourage you to attend. Now for the point of personal privilege. In my previous service in this esteemed body, my seatmate and I, Tom Murray at the time, had an agreement that we would never recognize either one of us when it came time to our birthdays. With my current seatmate, he and I chatted about this earlier this session, and we both agreed that since our birthdays were in late September, that we didn't have to worry about it because we knew the Senate would not keep us here that long. Well, we were both incorrect. So last week he recognized my birthday. I would like to recognize his birthday, which is tomorrow. So join me in wishing him a happy birthday.
Happy birthday. For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Von Hafen, rise?
For an announcement.
Lady has the floor.
I made this announcement last week, but this week is National Drive Electric Week, and today is our Drive Electric event that's out in front of the General Assembly on Jones Street, and they're going to be here till 4 o'clock. I hope you will all come out, at least stop by real quick, see our two Teslas that are out there, and please sign up to take a test drive and learn about why electric vehicles are the future of North Carolina. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise?
One person approves.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, we didn't agree. He agreed. also, I want to kind of follow up on Representative Kidwell's statement when he was talking about what sounded to me like I'm having a lot of trouble figuring out whether Vicky was having a heart attack or not. Back in the 80s, when I was serving two churches down in Anson County, I had a very dear friend named Ted Parker. He was a nut, but, you know, I just loved the guy. He was fantastic. And he was having symptoms and was taken to the hospital, and they said he couldn't find anything. Did EKG, couldn't find anything, sent him home, he died. And it turns out, I'm sure we've made a lot of medical advances since the 80s, so hopefully this won't happen again to somebody, but the problem was that the heart attack was on the back side of his heart, and EKG wouldn't detect it. I don't know what status is with that kind of thing today, but I just want to say, please, if you think you're having a heart attack, you insist, or have your family insist, or somebody in your family's having it, you make sure that they really check you out thoroughly, because I wouldn't want that happening to any of y'all. Just know that they can miss it, and just be careful about that. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Columbus, Representative Jones, rise?
For an announcement.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans will caucus immediately after session in 1228 for a quick caucus.
We do have several other things, but I do want to stress this to the Republicans going to caucus. It is imperative that you get there as soon as you can so that we can end that. I have an announcement to make as well for you all in caucus, just an update on things, and I'm going to need to pop in and pop out. So we'd ask that members get there as quickly as you could as well. For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Austin, rise?
For a point of personal privilege.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I cannot speak as an alumna of North Carolina Central or of North Carolina A&T, but NC Central is in my district, so I feel compelled to stand up and weigh in on this debate or on these remarks. You know, I'm sure like a lot of you, I felt very excited that football season was starting again, and I was especially excited to see North Carolina Central start their season again. So to that team, congratulations, and congratulations on an amazing effort this past weekend. To my colleagues to the West at NCA&T, charity comes in a lot of different forms. So on behalf of folks in my district, you are very welcome, and there's always next year, so start getting ready. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
To point of personal privilege, Mr.
Gentleman has the floor.
I take this mask off with great pleasure. As you know, the body knows I'm an HBCU champion, and that does include being a champion of North Carolina A&T when they will deserve. They did win the game, but I will have to ask them loudly, and I would love to get a reply, to what their current record is on the season. I believe it's 1-2. And the North Carolina Central Eagles are 2-2, and we are a four-time MEAC basketball champion. And so we know that, you know, while what does it say, the sun shines on a dog every once in a while. And that dog is the Aggies this go round. And so while you've won this one, we can't wait to see you in McClendon McDougal in late December and in the winter. So I am an HBCU love champion, and I want to make sure that you succeed. But like you said, trouble don't last always, so enjoy it while it's here. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Sir. For what purpose does the gentleman from Iredell, Representative McNeely, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
Gentleman has the floor.
Through divine guidance and appointed destiny, this past Saturday, David reached down, picked up a rock, and slew Goliath. Go Pack.
Well said. For what purpose does the gentleman from Swain, Representative Clampett, rise?
An announcement.
Gentleman has the floor.
The International Bluegrass Music Association's World of Bluegrass is the most important week in bluegrass. Now, if you're wondering what bluegrass I'm talking about, I'm not talking about Kentucky bluegrass. I'm talking about bluegrass music. This week encompasses four events at the IBMA Business Conference, September 28 and 30. The IBMA Bluegrass Ramble, an innovative series of showcases taking place September 28 through 30 in downtown Raleigh. That's here, folks. At the Raleigh Convention Center, the 32nd annual IBMA Music Awards presented by Yamaha, scheduled for Thursday evening, September 30. The IBMA Bluegrass Live, powered by PNC, October 1 and 2, a two-day festival. The IBMA Bluegrass Level features the best of the best in bluegrass today, benefiting the IBMA Trust Fund, a charitable organization that assists bluegrass professionals during financial emergencies, and introducing music to the thousands of the new fans every year. An estimated 200,000 will attend in person, while others may participate online since the festival will be streamed live. Just so you know, it brings over $18 million to the city of Raleigh. I'm proud to say the Entertainer of the Year nominees are Dale McCrory Band, Balsam Range from Haywood County, and the Pobos Ramblin' Boys will perform at this year's show, as well as the reigning 2020 Entertainer of the Year, Vocal Group of the Year winner, and 2021 Vocal Group nominee, Sister Sadie. I encourage everyone to take the time to walk downtown Raleigh and listen to these banjo pickers, mandolin players, and just all-around good kind of folk. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Macon, Representative Gillespie, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We all have LAs that we are very proud of that do a lot of hard work for us and we get the credit for. Today I rise and ask you to rise and recognize my LA who's having a birthday on Friday. Andrew Bailey, I appreciate you, sir, and happy birthday.
Members, it appears we've exhausted the notices and updates and points of personal privilege, so the chair will speak to several. First off, I just will say, Representative Kidwell, it's good to see you back, sir. It's good to see you back here. I know a lot of that everyone in this room prayed for you and your wife's full recovery. And it's great to see you back, and certainly wishing for her to make a full recovery and that we all move past this this dreadful disease. Secondly, would also just give an update of kind of where we are. Remember I explained the process of how the budget works, the area chairs, and it goes to the senior chairs, and then it goes from the senior chairs to Senator Berger and myself. I am pleased to report that Senator Berger and I concluded our meetings at 9:30 this morning, and we have reached an agreement with the Senate for a legislative proposal. What will be happening next is that we will be putting that together, and we will be sharing some information with the governor. We will also be sharing that information with through the process here, as per the process. So that's where things are right now. That's a good sign, because that means that we should be able to start moving towards some finality in that in the coming days or weeks. No set time for a vote just yet. We'll see if we can get that done next week, but don't know that that will, if it will be next week or the week after. Certainly hope by the week after we'll be in a position to have a week or have a vote, but would anticipate there are going to be some negotiations and discussions with the governor with what we present to the governor at the end of this week. So that's where things stand on that. I believe Representative Hall, the redistricting committee, is undertaking their work. I don't know if you want to give an update on the schedule yet. The gentleman is recognized if you'd like to do that momentarily. But we are certainly working toward moving the House toward the end of a session that has been one that has certainly been very interesting, to say the least, confronted with things that were certainly beyond our control, but one that I'm proud to say that this body has risen to the challenge and has done great work for the people of the state. With that, Representative Hall, if the gentleman would like to give an update on where we are in the redistricting process. I know folks have just general questions, so the gentleman has the floor to make an announcement on that.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you know, we're continuing public hearings, and that schedule is on the back of your calendar today. That'll wrap up this week. I anticipate having a House Redistricting Committee meeting on Tuesday of next week, so just watch your inbox, and I anticipate also having a House Committee meeting on redistricting on Wednesday as well. So watch your email for further updates.
Chair also meant to advise, as far as votes next week, whatever we're voting on, it would be, I don't anticipate the budget or anything, but we may have some policy bills floating back and forth. If we have votes next week, the chair is anticipating those would be on Wednesday at this point. If that changes and it ends up being Thursday instead of Wednesday, we'll advise the members as soon as we know. But there are some committee meetings, as Representative Hall just pointed out, for Tuesday and Wednesday. And again, the chair does anticipate votes Wednesday. Don't know how many bills at this point, but we're trying to respect everyone's time and make sure that when we have you here, that it's here to actually conduct the votes that need to take place. Any questions on that? For what purpose the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
A question for Representative Moffitt.
Representative Hall, or who?
Moffitt.
Moffitt, Representative. Looks okay. Like you have to catch him out in the hall.
Okay. It was just about all the announcements and how that potentially affected the ABC meeting that he calendar for today. Okay. I know that the caucus would be his caucus.
Representative Sane may be able to speak to it.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There was a notice sent out that 15 minutes after session ends is when the ABC committee will meet. So whenever we gavel down and
okay. All right, just making sure. I know that the caucus is with meeting, so I didn't know if that affected
Representative Hawkins, I don't anticipate that the caucus is going to take more than 10 minutes. Of course, that depends on how long it takes people to make that long trip down one set of stairs to an office right down there. So we're going to try to push everybody along to get that done. So again, to the members of the Republican caucus, by the way, if any other members want to join the Republican caucus, it's never too late. To those members of the Republican caucus, please go immediately to that meeting whenever we adjourn. For what purpose, the lady from Wake, Representative Dahlrise.
Inquiry of the chair.
Ladies recognized.
So you said that you anticipated votes on Wednesday or Thursday. Are you stating that there will be no votes on Monday or Tuesday?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you for the
clarification. Or tomorrow, or Friday, or Saturday, or Sunday, for that matter.
Thank you, sir.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torrey?
Real quick, Mr. Speaker, as chair of the North Carolina Motorsports Caucus, we'd like to remind those members that the Roval is this Sunday at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Look forward to seeing you all there.
Any further notices or announcements? Seeing none, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House to now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, September 30th at 10 a.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Hall moves, seconded by Representative Lucas, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, September 30th at 10 a.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House stands adjourned.
On motion of the chair, House Bill 264, short title, Emergency Powers Act, Accountability. That bill is withdrawn from the calendar. 36B, recommitted to the Committee on Rules, and thereafter withdrawn from the Committee on Rules and placed back on the calendar 36B. Reading of a representative statement, clerk will read.
A representative statement on Rapids High School's 100th anniversary. Whereas for 10 years following its incorporation in 1897, Rapids had no established school system, and whereas a special school district charter was prepared and introduced in the North Carolina General Assembly, read three times and ratified on February 26, 1907, and whereas on May 11, 1907, the first election was held in the new school district, the ballot was and the choice were simple. For schools or against schools. The voters spoke clearly, with 89% voting for schools, and whereas by 1915, Roanoke Rapids had three schools to educate all grades, but credit conditions of the fast-growing Roanoke Rapids necessitated the construction of a junior-senior high school building, and whereas at the request of the school board, the General Assembly authorized bond elections in 1917, 1919, 1920 to raise over $500,000 for expansion of the school facilities in Roanoke Rapids, including the junior-senior high school, with voters overwhelmingly approving each bond issue in. Whereas, the Board of School Trustees appointed a committee of five to secure a site and plans for the building. In June 1919, the board purchased 16 lots on Hamilton and Washington Streets, including land on both sides of 8th Street. The committee hired a prominent New York architect, Robert B. Upjohn, who presented plans for the new junior-senior high school to the board in January 1928. Whereas the Roanoke Rapids High School building was central to Samuel Patterson's vision of Roanoke Rapids as a model new South town, it was a true article of faith, a symbolic offering to the power of education, the future of this small community. And whereas the community pledged its support to educate in the new high school at the groundbreaking ceremony on March 15, 1920, Upjohn's design for the building was a modern adaptation of Elizabethan Gothic or Tudor Revival style, a reference to the general universities at Oxford and Cambridge. And whereas the plans called for a three-story junior-senior high school building containing 24 classrooms, including a manual training room, domestic science facilities, a chemistry and biology laboratory, and a music room. And whereas the huge auditorium would seat 2,000 patrons, the basement area below the auditorium would feature a gymnasium with track area, swimming pool, and showers. And whereas people traveled from great distances to view the majestic site of this stately and impressive castle, costing $500,000 being built in the middle of a field of a dirt road in a small community of 3,500 people in. Whereas the high school opened on September 19, 1921 with 58 teachers and 1,457 students. It stood out as one of the largest, costliest, and best designed schools in North Carolina. And whereas citizens embraced the new facility as a monumental testimony to their commitment to education, the new school was expected to be the center of community life. And whereas today the senior high building continues to serve as an active school and remains unchallenged as an architectural centerpiece in the town. In 1988, the senior high building was placed on the National Register of Historic Places, and recently a North Carolina preservation expert called it the best high school building in the state. And whereas senior high school building is part of Sam Patterson's legacy, but so too is Roanoke Rapids High School tradition of educational excellence. The history of the school and the school of the district are a tribute to the progressive leadership begun by Patterson and sustained by countless others. And whereas as envisioned, the Roanoke Rapids High School has continued to serve as a centerpiece of the city, a historic landmark for both the community, the state, and a place to house students and classes. Upjohn perfectly brought to life industrialist Samuel Patterson's visions for the school to be a symbolism of power of education. This historic school has seen a century of memories and continues to produce graduates who embody Patterson's dream of the power of education in. Whereas the community celebrates the 100th anniversary of the Roanoke Rapids High School, its pride for school remains as strong now as it did 100 years ago. Now, therefore, it is fitting to observe the 100th anniversary of Roanoke Rapids High School, the oldest high school building still in use in North Carolina, and to commend the citizens of Roanoke Rapids for their contributions in preserving this historic building. And witness whereof, the undersigned certifies that the foreign statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on the 29th day of September 2021. Submitted by Representative Michael Ray, James White, House Principal Clerk.